You're listening to the Friends Electric Podcast, Episode 4, Let's Go Back a Bit. For past and future episodes of this podcast, go to friendselectric.com. Good evening and welcome to Episode 4 of the Friends Electric Podcast. Today's episode features a conversation with the creators of the addictive pick-up-and-play physics iPhone game, Ramps. I'd like now to welcome the illustrious Tim Sears and our very own Tyler Sticca. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us tonight, guys.
Thanks, Peter.
Thank you. I'm impressed that you got through the pick up and play. I can't even do it right now.
Had to practice that a couple of times. So.
That was a beautiful description. I think we should just take that sound bite out right now and just loop it like every 10 seconds when we play a trailer for the game. That's great.
That sounds perfect. All right, so first off, I'd like you guys to take a moment and talk a bit about yourselves and what exactly you do. So, Tim, if we want to start with you.
Sure, that sounds great. My name is Tim Sears, and I am a developer. I work by day for Wagner Edstrom with Tyler, and I work in our Studio D team where I do .NET development and a little bit of iOS, and we've done an iPhone app, and we're working on another iPhone app right now, but in my spare time, I started sort of a freelance consulting company a couple years ago after creating my first iPhone app called Robot Vision, which was one of the first mobile augmented reality browsers for the iOS platform, and worked for about a year on that, doing some consulting and some freelance gigs for some clients, and last August, got this really passionate, powerful email from Tyler describing his quest to bring Ramps to a touch gaming platform, and I got really excited and inspired by that, and we started working together, and so for the last 8, 9, 10 months or so, have been spending a lot of my focus on doing touch gaming development for iOS.
Very cool. And so how long have you been in development in general?
So I graduated from Oregon State University in 2004, so about 7 years now or so, and have touched a variety of different languages from PHP to classic ASP to .NET to Objective-C and Cocoa now. So.
Very nice. So how do you feel like what you're doing now rates compared to everything else?
In terms of quality, it's my best work.
I guess my question would be more, let's see, is it more fun with Objective-C than, say, PHP?
Well, you know, they're very different languages, and they're used for a variety of different purposes. And really, I think what draws me to a language and a platform often is the ability to do cool things with it and to have a lot of flexibility. And what really drew me to the iOS platform is not only the fact that they were sort of paving the way in terms of, you know, hardware features and multi-touch and that sort of thing. And aside from the fact that there's a great market there, in terms of your ability to have a broad distribution to a wide customer base. But really, I'm just kind of drawn to the ability to create great things with UI and to create user experiences that allow me to showcase my abilities to the best of my ability. So I feel like the iPhone has really enabled me to do that a lot because I really wanted to work with multi-touch, and I really wanted to be able to do a lot of cool things in a native environment that were really difficult for me to do in a web environment. And I feel like working with iOS as a platform has really enabled me to do that.
Well, that's pretty cool. Tyler, what about you?
I am by day, I am also a designer at Wagner Edstrom and also on the Studio D side of things. I am one of the lead designers for a team of 10 or so experienced designers with kind of we we're definitely experienced designers in that we create websites and apps and fun stuff like that. We've also got a really strong illustration component. So we do a lot of infographics and things like that that you see go on blogs or to visualize what new a lot of new tech products and other things do. The most recent big launch we had was that we did the 2011 site for the Sasquatch Music Festival, and we were excited about that because it was a chance to make a site that responds to the device width. So so yeah, so it works on a desktop or on an iPad or on an iPhone, and we also used a hybrid audio player with HTML5 and Flash, so that because we still wanted to listen to the tunes and discover artists on an iPhone or on an iPad or anything like that. So we've been doing a lot of fun stuff like that, and so that's what I do during the day. And by night, I am also expectedly a co-founder back a bit. And yes, and it's nice hearing Tim say it was an impassioned email, because to me it sounded like a self-deprecating, panicky plea for help after 3 years or so of false starts, getting the game off the ground. So it's been a real treat collaborating with him. And other than that, I occasionally do freelance, I occasionally teach, and I occasionally do speaking gigs. But Wagner and Backabit are my prime focuses at the moment.
Cool. I saw that you guys are on the list for Web Visions this year, actually talking about ramps. Is that right?
Yeah, Brad Smith, who runs the Web Visions Festival, I've been a speaker there a couple times. And Tim, you do a fair bit of speaking too. Is this going to be your first time speaking at Web Visions?
Yeah, it is actually. I was lined up to speak with Amber Case and another individual last year, but that kind of fell through at the last minute, which was kind of unfortunate, but I'm excited to be speaking with you there this year. So
nice. Yeah, he asked if I wanted to, and it was funny because this was when he asked. It was when ramps had broken the top 100, and I remember that was like a big deal. And it was a little surreal later when we had to ask Brad to change the description and other information around our session, because a week or two later, it had actually broken the top 10. And we went back and just glanced at the site, and I think it was Tim who said, well, this description became inaccurate very quickly. So so we had to go back and revise it. But it should be fun. It's going to be a brisk 15-minute talk. So it'll be really, really quick and really fast-paced and really fun. And Tim and I will just talk about basically what the experience was and more importantly, the lessons we learned from developing our first game for iOS, and we hope it'll help anyone else who's thinking about doing a game, who's even thinking about doing any sort of like side project, because it's really about the game part of it is almost incidental. What it was really about was successfully kind of pursuing and shipping and even marketing. You know, it's funny thinking of it that way as marketing, because even though we had like marketing discussions, it's like it's really just Tim and I sending emails and talking to people. But it really is, you know, you can't overestimate how important that is to just make sure that you you're putting it out there and everything. So we'll be talking about that. Sounds like a lot for 15 minutes, but we promise it isn't going to be a mile a minute. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, that sounds pretty sweet. So if I may be so bold, I know you mentioned that Ramps is broken into the top 10. I think the highest it got was the top 8 or the 8th top or whatever you want to call that.
Yep.
Yeah.
That was pretty awesome. So let's see. I'll be bold, and you can easily tell me that you can't talk about this, but I was curious if Apple lets you. But how many copies of Ramps have you sold now?
Oh, Tim, you probably look at the stats more than I do, don't you? I guess I can look it up right now. I'm in front of a computer, but I
did actually check today, and today we will have received our 90,000th purchased copy, and we have over 125,000 users that are playing. So there are some people out there that didn't feel the need to pony up the $1.99. But, you know, that's cool. People are out there enjoying it, and I'm happy that we were able to reach so many people.
In some ways, it feels like you're not really on the map until you get pirated. But not that we like it, not that we
Right.
haven't,
Well, that's an interesting stat that because 90,000 to 125, that is a higher rate of piracy than I would have imagined, and certainly higher than I bet Apple wants people
Oh yeah, I
to
mean
think is going
I
on out
think
there.
we were both amazed when we when I think I don't know, Tim, if I think first Tim pointed out a discrepancy in our analytics of usage versus our price, and I remember, I think it was actually the other way around at first, but I remember there's something like that, and then I Googled it one day just to see and just discovered. I mean, it really is incredible. It's basically like just an app store, and it's very, there's a lot of stuff written in Russian and different languages, but it really is incredible. And I wanted to make sure that, I ended up not really freaking out about it. Well, maybe a little bit, and I am when I told Tim, but ultimately, what made me okay with it is that I realized that it happened to every game. Like there were even games that were probably had a smaller audience than we did that week, and it was just every game I had on my phone had a similar issue. So, it's unavoidable. It is thankfully a small percentage of our audience. I think Tim and I are just grateful that the majority of people that play the game are people that want to support our development and everything. And I hope if you are the sort of person who's pirating a title that if you enjoy it a lot, consider going and buying the real thing. I mean, I know you can't transfer your progress over, but that's kind of your penalty for getting to have an unlimited free demo period.
The one thing that really put it into perspective for me was I was reading an article a while ago, and I think it was for Cannibalt, and Cannibalt was really bold in their aggressive pricing strategy, and that they released it for $2.99. And I remember seeing a comment in that article or a brief blurb that mentioned that they had a great low piracy rate because it was below 50%. And so the fact that our piracy rate is below 50%, I'm just kind of using that as a baseline metric that, that should be a good thing. So.
Yeah, that is surprising, I must say. So actually on that, you guys originally priced price ramps at $2.99, and then obviously because of all the fame and the fortune there, changed the pricing. And so I'm curious, today it's at $1.99, is that correct? And can I ask like what the thought process was as you've gone and changed the prices throughout the process?
So, when we received our first Apple feature for New and Noteworthy, just kind of based on all of the market research that we'd done in terms of how other indie game developers for iOS have approached pricing, is that when you get a feature like that or some major press coverage, dropping the price really helps kind of fuel the momentum to push you up higher into the rankings. And so as soon as we got that first feature, we dropped to 99 cents to see how high we could go in the rankings because you get some perpetual momentum based on being in those rankings, which drives to more sales. And in the end, I think that really helped us gain some visibility as that got us another feature into the What's Hot section the following week, which I'm pretty sure is driven based on your ability to generate sales. And hopefully at that point that led to getting, more onto Apple's radar in terms of choosing to feature Ramps as iPhone Game of the Week. But I think the reason that we've got Ramps at $1.99 now is just kind of based off of our feeling of what the market looks like in terms of how others are pricing their games, what we feel like the game is worth. And I think Tyler and I have kind of gone back and forth a little bit just in discussion that, maybe that $2.99 might have been a little bit too high at first, but it was our first iOS gaming title. We were kind of testing the pricing market a little bit, and I think we feel like we've landed at a good price point for an iPhone game right now.
Yeah, and it becomes, this is the sort of thing where you can actually get a lot of almost inadvertent feedback from the user reviews as well, because I noticed that we get complaints when the app is at 99 cents because it's not always 99 cents, and we get complaints at 2.99 that it's too expensive. At 1.99, we get less of those. We don't get people who are saying, oh my God, this should always be this price or something, and seem, and then you don't get the people saying it's too expensive. And so we really watched that, and we kind of went like, well, okay, if at $1.99 the reviews generally seem satisfied, then that must be, because it's not just a price thing, it's also audience. And just for some reason, the $1.99 audience seems like our happiest audience. So I think we've sort of settled there. But that doesn't mean, I mean, one of the great things about digital is that we can grow with our audience, and we're not, this isn't a box that we have to go get people at retailers to go put a new price sticker on. So we can respond to, whatever the app is worth to the audience of the moment in a lot of ways. And it's just one of the great things about this platform. I'm sure every platform, Tim and I will be having the same back and forth that we had with this. Price was one of the things we took the longest to decide on, and or maybe we're still deciding. But yeah, it was the biggest back and forth. This week we think we'll do this, and this week we think we did that. And one thing that I do have to mention is that we're really thankful to other indie game developers are just great. And so I was able to email a couple. I know Tim talked to them too, and even when we don't talk to them directly, they've just been so. One of the reasons we've been trying to write a healthy blog is because the blogs of other developers was just I cannot overstate how valuable it was when we were making and attempting to market this game. Everything from costs to analytics to getting, managing your reviews. I mean, there is just so much information out there, and the developer community is so, welcoming and forthcoming. And I don't know if it's because, it's still a young platform, so the whole cutthroat competitive mentality hasn't really hasn't creeped into it yet. But I do have to say that indie game devs are just some of the nicest people on the planet. So that's probably part of it too, is even just absorbing more of their knowledge as well, and figuring out, what's applicable to our title.
Well, that's cool. Let's see, there were two things that I wanted to capture in what you guys were talking about. The first one, Tyler, you just mentioned that the $1.99, the $1.99 audience seemed to be the happiest. And so I'm interested in how the reviews at different price points has influenced the game in any way. Has there been like more constructive reviews you found with the $1.99 or with the $2.99 than compared to the $99 or what?
Well, generally, what's nice is that we're at a four-star average right now, I believe, and I can't speak for Tim, but I'm pretty darn happy about that. Given the other, I tend to look at our reviews and then go look at some of my other iPhone, favorites, and compare to see, okay, well, how does this map to, this game that I really love? And I'm pretty happy with that. So overall, we're really lucky to have an audience that, seems to dig what we're doing. And we do have a lot of people provide feedback that's mostly constructive. But I mean, it's the internet, so there's always going to be people who offer feedback that's less than constructive. And a lot of times, Tim and I are actually fairly sympathetic to it. We don't like hearing if someone says like, oh, there's, this is making me crash, or maybe this level was too hard, or I don't understand this, this design element or something. And if they're really upset, we really care, because we never want our games to be, physically upsetting to somebody. But occasionally, you will get one where you, I guess the ones that are the most heartbreaking are when it's a problem that that you could have helped them solve. Like, it's almost more of like a misunderstanding or something you don't hear very often, but something with a very easy solution. And you'll hear them say something like, I encountered this problem, and I deleted the app. And you just it, it this is part of like, you know, we had so much fun building this and we want people to love the game so much that when we hear that, it's just like, oh, like we just, I wish I could reach out and, you know, poke that person on the shoulder and just go, hey, before you delete that, 1 second, just try this. And then, okay, you get it. But, and then have them be able to enjoy it and have a good experience. You know, when people go to our support page and email us, and there's only two things, we almost never give, we only ever give two recommendations to people, and they almost always work, and that's either to make sure you have the latest version, update the app, and also, you know, restart your device. And of the people who have contacted us or visited the support page since we put that information up, there hasn't been a single person who hasn't had their problem solved by following one of those two directions. So, so it is occasionally, you know, I guess frustrating is a good word for it, just because you want your users to have the best experience and you want them to be constructive and give you feedback and help make the game better. But when there are tools in place that can help them do that, and for some reason you just didn't get it to them in the right way, you know, it's frustrating because you want everyone to have fun playing it. It is a game after all. So I don't know, Tim, if you have a different opinion than I do on that or not. But
well, I think it's interesting because Apple provides a mechanism for you to input a support URL when you submit your app, and they have a mechanism for user reviews. And it's just the majority of the user base of people that use the App Store, those user reviews are so front and center, and they're such a pivotal part of how people evaluate whether to purchase an app or not, that really, I think for a lot of people, like the user review system becomes part of the support mechanism. Like if there's something that they, you know, a lot of times we'll get reviews like, we really like the app, or, you know, I really like the app, but it would be great if you supported landscape right orientation in addition to landscape left. Of course, they don't necessarily use that nomenclature, but you get the idea. And it's funny is sometimes we'll see reviews like that, and it's like, oh, duh, that should have been in there from the first version. And,
right,
you know, we'll implement that. But there's no way to follow up with that person. I mean, like you're saying, Tyler. So it'll be interesting to see if at some point Apple revamps that system to maybe bring those support mechanisms a little more front and center, or even to integrate them into the review process, so that the developer can give feedback in a constructive way.
Right. I mean, this problem isn't unique to the App Store. You know, you look at Amazon or eBay or any e-commerce, this is a common problem. You'll see people, you know, marks an Amazon product as 1 star because they had a shipping issue. And of course, that has nothing to do with the quality of the product they're reviewing, but something, you know, happened in the delivery mechanism. And that's where, you know, that's the place that makes the most sense to that user to voice their concern. And so, you know, I would rather have an ecosystem that allowed for very, very swift feedback than that one that tried to silence or hide user concerns. But I am really looking forward to, like Tim is saying, you know, when you look at some of those other e-commerce things, they have ways for the seller to get in touch or ways for them to comment or you know, Apple does have this, did you find this review helpful, mechanism, which is definitely a good start. But I have a feeling, you know, it's such a prevalent thing on the App Store that I would be shocked if they weren't already working on a solution for it.
Yeah, if they haven't already, then hopefully they'll be following the blogs and can find this podcast. The other one that I wanted to hit on, Tim, you mentioned the week that you guys, I guess the process of getting new and noteworthy, and then what's hot, and then game of the week. I've heard that process of, I guess, getting promoted by Apple is a little, opaque, I believe would be the term. Did you guys know that this was coming? Or I know that you guys had assets that they used when they promoted these things, like images, you know, I'm sure that you guys prepared them. So I was curious, like, how do you know that they're going to make you game of the week or that sort of thing?
You don't. And from other people that I've talked to that are other iOS developers in the industry, I mean, it's been kind of a similar experience, like right down to a story somebody told me about where they expect they were going to be on stage at the WWDC presenting, and they didn't really know until an hour before. I think Apple doesn't really commit to that kind of stuff just in case they need to switch gears at the last minute. This is just my personal impression, but with the new and noteworthy and many of the other features, I mean, we showed up in staff favorites, I think, a week ago. A lot of that stuff is just kind of at Apple's discretion, and they have business development people that manage that sort of stuff, and they don't contact you directly when it happens, so it's kind of up to you to look out for it yourself. But we did get contacted by a representative from Apple asking for assets, letting us know that that they love the game, which was a delight for both Tyler and I, because to get that kind of feedback from somebody like Apple is fantastic. But there were no guarantees that the assets would even get used at all, and they made sure to call that out in the email. And so I remember Tyler frantically whipping up some art assets to send off, and because they don't give you a lot of time to get those submitted. And really, it was just kind of fingers crossed and wait and see.
Well, also, it was even more frantic, because I probably didn't need to be so frantic, but because the process is a little mysterious, I didn't want to have in the back of my head, like, what if I hadn't turned them in at the last minute, and maybe they were waiting. What if they were waiting on assets from two, minimally styled, casual physics puzzlers, and they were just waiting to see who got them assets first, and it's just all that stuff can dance around in the back of your head. So I remember wanting to get them compiled, as quick as I could, so that wouldn't be a possibility.
All right, so switching gears, I'm a little curious, where did the ideas for Ramped originate, and why did you end up deciding to go with iOS and the iPhone specifically?
Oh man, so well, Peter, you should remember this, because I was in college at the time, and you were a classmate. And I think, were you in that class with me? I can't remember if you were in, it was Dan Chapman's...
It was a flash class of some sort, was it?
Yeah, it was Dan Chapman's action script class. And
I might have been. It's a little hazy, all
yeah,
that.
Right. All those fast times at the Art Institute. But
indeed.
But yeah, no, it was... it was an action script class, and it was the first class where you learn how to do stuff not on the timeline. You learn how to do animation. We were working from the fantastic Keith Peters book, Foundation Action Script Animation, which I understand there's an AS3 version now, but at the time we were doing AS2, and he had these cool exercises in there to do some simple physics, things like gravity and velocity, and one of the exercises involved making inclines. So you made a line and you tilted it, and then you had a sphere, or a circle rather, respond to it in 2D space. And I remember, in college I was definitely as much of a nerd as I am right now, and a tinkerer. And I remember for some reason there was something that struck me about that in particular. We had done a lot of different exercises, but that felt fun. And I remember in class adding like one thing, which was, it was a little Swift that would basically, I think I still have the Swift sitting around somewhere. I keep meaning to blog it, but you'd basically open it and it would just auto-generate like different ramps of different angles and sizes, and then just make like 20 different red balls. And you could click and drag these lines around, and the spheres would react to them the way they should. And I remember thinking that was pretty fun, and right away I had this idea of, well, if I, I had seen like games like The Incredible Machine and everything like that. I can't say that I was a big fan of them. Not to say I'm not a fan, I just didn't play them very much. But I was aware of them, and it kind of struck me like, oh, geez, I'm very close to a game. If I just had a single point of origin for the ball, you could move and control the tilt of these ramps, and there was like a goal of some sort, you construct some levels that would, be kind of fun to play. And I'm a fan of casual games and stuff, so it appealed to me. So that week, I probably neglected my other homework a bit more than I should have, but I built this really simple, I think it only had like five levels and they just looped, this game called Ramps. And I called it that because that's what you drug around. And I didn't think anything would come of it. It was just like a fun... It was basically a way to ensure I would get an A on the assignment, because I went way overboard. And so I created this thing, and it had a very industrial look to it, because I thought, well, where are their ramps? And I thought, well, skate park, so that doesn't really work because they, you know, this has nothing to do with that. Well, maybe like a factory or something. So it was a very loose theme, but that's why in the original game everything looks a little like it looks very much like a student who's excited that Flash is available, trying to make something look kind of industrial or weird looking. And so I ended up making this. My teacher really liked it and was really encouraging, and I had fun playing it. And what struck me is that my mom, who is not a gamer, had fun playing it, and that's when I thought, oh, maybe I should push this forward. So I kept doing it little by little over the weeks, and I made it into this 33. I have no idea why I stopped at 33. I think my memory's a little hazy, but if I remember correctly, I think it had 50 levels, and 17 of them ended up being either impossible or just not any fun. So I just cut them out. I didn't replace them. It's just 33, like bam. And I implemented this. I didn't know how to do game saves, and I didn't have the resources to do like a web server or anything. I didn't even know server-side programming at the time, so I didn't even know where you begun. So I did this horrible password continue system, which later actually became like this thing, like people playing it like love the passwords because I was a real geek about it. And so they're mostly like song lyrics, but there's a few Anchorman quotes in there, and the passwords are just the goofiest things. And there's still a secret password no one has ever found out. And I know Peter knows it and Tim might not. We're not going to say it on air because of what it results in. But it's not anything obscene, but there's a very secret password no one's figured out that results in a fun visual change that's privileged for only those who know. So if you see me at a conference, you can ask me or something. But
I'm intrigued now because I don't know what it is.
Oh, I swear I showed it to you very early on, but I'll show it again sometime. But okay. But yeah, so anyway, so I did this game. And again, when you're a student and you're paying for the lowest plan on your web host that you possibly can, you know nothing about server optimization or anything else, you know, I was always more concerned with keeping load off my server than I was with success, which is really absurd now, because if I could go back and tell myself anything, it would be like, if you have something that's successful, you should be able to find a way to fund, you know, just the I mean, this was only the final game, because it was all like actions when there was no sound, it was only like 38 KB. So it was going to take, like, I don't know where I thought that I was going to, like, man, can I hack like some BitTorrent solution? Cause this thing is going to go out of control. But I don't know what I was thinking, but I basically started posting it on sites like DeviantArt and Newgrounds and anywhere that had like a Flash community, and it started getting popular. It got featured on Newgrounds, it got featured on DeviantArt, and I had about 50,000 people play it in the span of a week or two, and I remember being blown away. And again, being a student, I think I was like just barely a junior in college, I and having no business savvy whatsoever, people started asking me, hey, can I put this game on game site A, B, or C, you know, some free game site? And me, being a total dope, said, like, sure, you know, just thinking, like, I was excited to even get it anywhere. And so right then and there, I basically killed any potential to cash in on the people playing the game. That sounds really callous, but there was just no way. Like, I couldn't put ads in. I couldn't even, like, promote something because there was no central server. I basically just handed out the SWIFT and told people, yeah, go ahead, embed it anywhere. Ugh, I am kicking myself to this day because there's no way to reach those people. I can't even put out a notification now to tell them, you know, hey, there's an iOS game. But luckily though, I posted it on my own site, which is funny that came last, but I posted it on my own site, and it got put on a few sites like Delicious and everything, but where it really took off was on StumbleUpon. And when it got on StumbleUpon, it went viral, and about a million people checked it out within the span of a couple months. And so it was really exciting. And every job interview I had after that, everyone had always played that game, sometimes without even knowing that I had made it. And even though a million people is not much in the scheme of like the United States, in the scheme of like Portland indie Flash games, it's pretty darn good. So that was cool. But again, no way to re-engage with that audience, no way to turn it into something. And I attempted to follow it up with something more complex, but I am a designer first, and I always felt that there was either a technical hurdle or a level of interest hurdle every time I tried to make a sequel that outdid it. The physics are extremely questionable. Pretty much anything I had to do myself that wasn't in that Keith Peters book, The Worst Offender, is the physics on the goal cup, are just really horrendous, and I just couldn't seem to get beyond that. So I kind of resigned myself to not really doing a game for a while, and later on I had a ThinkPad tablet PC. I still have it, actually. I'm looking at it right now. This a tablet PC, and this was before, you know what, the iPhone was probably out. I think it was 2007, but it hadn't, it didn't even have an app store yet. So I remember I was with some friends. I think we were at like Ringler's in Portland. Because we're nerds, I had a tablet PC along with me, and I remember showing off some stuff. And I forgot. I want to say I don't remember who it was, but someone suggested like, "Hey, let's look at what Ramps looks like on this thing." We pulled it open, and I started using the tablet pen to move it around, and all of a sudden, my interest in this thing just reignited because I realized that it was way easier to use touch for this thing than it ever was to use a mouse. Like, I realized right then and there, this concept belongs on a touch platform. Easier said than done when there's no app store and no dominant, you know, multi-touch device. But right then and there, I thought, you know, I gotta do this someday. This just seems so. Cut to, you know, Tim, what year did the App Store come out? Do you guys remember? Was it 2008 that it came out? Or,
yeah, it was the summer of 2008 with same time of the launch of the 3G.
Right, right. So the 2008 rolls around and there's an App Store, and the iPhone 3G was the first iPhone I owned, and I was just mesmerized by this platform. But now, you know, I had a hard enough time programming this thing in ActionScript. Now there's like Objective-C, and I didn't have a Mac at the time, and there was just no, you know, it just seemed impossible. So I did what I'd done on projects in the past, which is I just started asking around, like, are there any iOS developers that want to help me on this? And the App Store, you know, you really can't you can't really exaggerate how much momentum this had and how its success, its rapid success, you know, companies started buying iOS development super fast. And all of a sudden, you know, it wasn't like web development where it seemed like, you know, I knew a lot of people who knew JavaScript. It's like, I didn't know anyone who knew Objective-C. And the people that I would get in touch with would be so busy because they could get work so easily. And so I would connect with some developers who had more of a computer science background than a web background and knew some C or something like that and were willing to learn it. But, you know, this was a side project for them too, and it's a lot of work learning an entire platform and getting invested in it and everything and trying to make a game that outdoes, you know, this fairly successful Flash version. And of course, my vision was very different, so you can't use it as a total reference point in terms of visuals and everything and what I wanted to do with it. And so we had several false starts, and I forgot which game it was exactly. I can't remember if it was Cut the Rope or it was another game that involved kind of like a goal ball mechanic. It might have been Angry Birds or something like that. I mean, Angry Birds have been popular for a while, but I basically had this day where I noticed that all the popular games in the App Store were these physics games. And I had done one back in 2007, and now it's, you know, 2010, and there's like Angry Birds and Cut the Rope, and you know, there's even stuff like Crush the Castle, and there's just all these different physics games that are popular. And I looked at my game, which was still getting, you know, at this point it hadn't seen an update in 3 years, over 3 years, and yet it's still getting at least like 5,000 people with no advertising, no marketing. It doesn't even have its own site, are going to my little site and playing this game over and over in all sorts of different countries. And I thought to myself, you know, it has to be me. There's no reason why this wouldn't be built and successful already. You know, it just seems stupid to me. And so I knew two talented guys. I knew a developer, both worked at Wagner at the time. Jeff's with another agency right now, but I knew a guy named Jeff Perrys, who's a Silverlight dude. He writes Small World. He writes Foundation Silverlight Animation, put out by the same publisher as the Keith Peters book. It's kind of like the companion for that platform. And I knew Tim, and I first knew Tim because his app Twens that he built for Wagner beat my Twitter mashup Portraiture, and which anyone could have predicted because Twens is useful and Portraiture is a weird arty thing. But and so I told everyone, I go, Twens is something someone would actually use more than once, I think is how I put it to somebody. So I had very low expectations, but that was the first time. So I just knew him as that jerk who beat me at the Web Visionary Awards. Kidding, of course, but
you did get your robot though the next year.
Yeah, well, I actually won a robot for the first ramps, and then I won a Web Visionary Award for Tweet Plus later. Although I wasn't competing against you, is probably why. But yeah, so I knew of him, and I didn't write them an email asking, "Do you want to collaborate?" I wrote them an email because Jeff, being a Silverlight guy, was into some of the Windows Phone 7 stuff, and he wasn't like a game maker sort of guy, but I figured, maybe if I'm having such poor luck getting momentum with the iOS, maybe if I get in super early, like before there's even a device out, I can snag a developer for Windows Phone 7. Or, here's Tim, he's done Robot Vision, he's done, and Robot Vision, I remember reading about on TechCrunch and everything like that, and that was surreal because I read it on TechCrunch, and for some reason I missed that he did it, and I was already like, I was aware of him and stuff, and then like later I put two and two together and I'm just like, oh, weird. So I knew about his iOS development, and what I pretty much asked them both was, I told them the whole, and I apologize, it's such a long story, but I told them the whole sordid tale of this game that I made that got played by a lot of people, but I have no way to follow up, and it'd be perfect on multi-touch, but I can't find a developer, blah blah blah. And it was just this whole sob story, and it didn't culminate with can you help me? It culminated with, should I quit? Am I wasting my time? Or is there something I could do differently to find a developer? I just assumed that these guys would be way too busy. And so imagine my surprise with Jeff gave me some awesome feedback and stuff too, but imagine my surprise when Tim responds to I get an email, and I remember it because it was a little bit later at night. I sent the email to him like right when I got off work, but later at night I'm getting ready for bed, and of course, like all geeks, one of the last things I do before I go to bed is I check my email. And I see on my phone this email and then a video file, and I remember before I even read the email, because I'm a snoop, I just like, oh, video, and I click that and it downloads, and it's him taking a video of his iPhone playing, or maybe it was his MacBook screen, but regardless, a video of the basic physics of ramps working on the iPhone. And I remember I couldn't get to sleep right away because it just blew me away that he had within hours of me sending that email, gotten farther on implementing the game than any of my previous, false starts had. So yeah, anyway, that is a very long story. I am sorry, but I don't know if we can, maybe we should double that to twice the speed and I can say it like Alvin and the Chipmunks. But yeah, anyway, so that's the story of ramps.
There's a lot of information in there. Like, who would have flunked it that if Tim had not been there, we could have seen Windows Phone 7 be the inaugural place for ramps. I guess that gets down to my ports question, but I'll still save that for that one for later. Oh, wow, that's well, that was just delightful. And so I guess we already talked about to Tim about why he was doing iOS stuff, but I guess that's the whole tale. We now have it. We can probably box this portion of the
Well,
podcast up and sell the thing.
one thing I realize I haven't really talked about, and I'll just say it very briefly because I realize I usually stop right when we start working on it, and I never really talk about, but one of the things that will probably strike people if they played the Flash game and they play the iOS game is that it is really different visually. And what I wanted to do, and this was I had a very simple comp before Tim and I started working, but Tim definitely encouraged this and kind of opened up what I could do, because I was coming into this, Tim, would you say I came into this really timid? Like, I remember when we started that I would always like say, like, well, I had this idea for this animation, but I realize it might be really difficult, so we can totally cut it. Like, I remember having that those sort of those sort of qualifiers a lot because I was just so nervous that you were just going to one day go, nope, this designer's being unreasonable. I'm going to cut out because it had happened so many times before. But
I think
but, yeah.
that I approached the process so aggressively. I remember like taking your comp and I was like cutting it up myself in Photoshop just because I was so ready to like, okay, I gotta pair up the sprite of the ball with the actual physics object, and I'm just gonna keep going because I've got this momentum, and then we'll circle back later. And so I felt like I had gotten so much momentum going with it and pursuing like every idea that you had aggressively that like if you threw something out there, I was just gonna go after it and see if I could get it to work. And I think like, I mean, we only really had to throw out a few things that like didn't really work, and that was after, you know, we tried it and iterated and it just like didn't
right.
feel right. Like, so yeah, I mean, it's, I think that like, I think that we both surprised ourselves with this, with this
right.
whole process.
Right. I mean, compared to like when we started, you know, I would, so I wanted to like really a flatter style, something that felt friendlier, you know, the last one. I'm not a person who loves like a ton of detail and stuff. I don't like ornate design. I don't love stuff that tries to mimic like every aspect of the real world. And so rather than try to do something that was really detailed and shiny and highly rendered, I want to do something cartoony and just fun. And I wanted to, you know, I was inspired by games like Super Meat Boy and you know, Super Paper Mario, and apparently a lot of games with the word super in them, but even stuff like Katamari Damacy. I remember one of the games that made me angry that I hadn't gotten to do ramps was Rolando, because it uses a lot of spheres, and it's just gorgeous 2D style, and I wanted to, I don't know if I mentioned Roco Loco already on the PSP, that's another great one, but yeah, so when we first started, I felt like I would always try to go for like whatever the simplest thing was, and I would always feel really hesitant about mentioning to Tim, like, can we do this? And then, you know, after a while, I realized that, you know, he was actually gonna, when we realized that we were actually gonna make the thing, then that made it better. But I realized that he wasn't gonna, you know, get scared by me trying to push him. And now I bet Tim, I bet you wish for those days back, because like on Ramps 1.1, when you transition to the dark world, the whole screen spins. And originally that's what I wanted. I wanted the whole thing to spin, or I wanted to like spiral or like suck down or something like that. And I remember that was like one of the most tear your hair out moments of 1.1, as he kept like, because Tim would keep trying and he'd reach a setback and he'd go, well, what if we do this? And I would always go like, I was most passive aggressive, like, well, that'd be good, but you know, there's just something about it that's not really, and I'd suggest these, you know, other weird hard solutions. And finally one day he gives me a build and it's just perfect. And so so I imagine moments like that, Tim, sometimes you have to, you know, you have to miss when I would just, you know, say like, oh, well, if it'll work and everything. But the problem is you proved me wrong so many times about being hesitant that now I just take it for granted.
Well, I don't know. I mean, my approach to development has always been very iterative, and I like a lot of rapid feedback. And so it's like if something, you know, if I nail something on the first try, then that's great. But like, I just kind of see it as a part of iterating. Like, I know that like when I throw something over the wall, like it's at least partially good, but I'm okay if it's not done. And like the whole figuring out how the screen was going to spin in a spiral and vortex for the dark world transition, like I never looked at it like it was really bad, just that it wasn't ever really done. So I mean it felt really cool because it really clicked for me too, like when we finally reached that point, like, you know, that this is the way that we want it to be, and I think it's like absolutely for the better. And it's actually probably a conversation for another day that would probably take 20 to 30 minutes describing the sort of interesting technical trickery involved with that. it was a good feeling when we finally got it, because it felt like a true accomplishment. So,
well, that's very cool. So those first few hours, I guess those got me thinking. Do you guys have any guess on up to today how much time you've put into ramps. I know it's a side project for both of you, and I'm not sure that I don't. I've talked to some people who work on side projects, and they go, "Oh, I don't even want to know how much time I spend." But now that it's successful, do you guys have any guess?
Well, Tim keeps way better track than I do, but
for 1.0, we had both estimated, because I remember we talked about it just to try and get a sense of like whether or not we would be profitable or whatever based on if we had, you know, our freelance billing rates and that sort of thing. But we had estimated that we had spent about 850 hours for 1.0. I'm guessing with 1.1, I'm guessing I probably put in between 200 to 250, and Tyler usually matches me in parity in terms of design time to development ratio. So I'm guessing that we probably put in around 1,200 to 1,300 hours.
That is crazy, but it's a fun statistic to track. So thank you for
yeah, I don't track it that closely. It's pretty, right. It's pretty loose.
It's fun. It's a labor of love. So it's more us even talking about it is more of a curiosity than anything else. Cause you know, the way we see it is just, you know, you can only really take that seriously if you can honestly tell yourself that you would have rather been playing a video game or something else during that time than making one. And I love video games, but I have a lot of fun making them. So
yeah, and I believe both of you have significant others. And I'm curious, how do they feel about these 1,200, 1,300 hours?
Yeah, Tim.
Well, so my wife is a full-time artist, and she has her studio in our home, right down the hall, actually, from where I work. So it's very easy for us to take little breaks, and we just kind of set up a little schedule so that, you know, around 9 o'clock every night, you know, we just kind of quit what we're doing, and we hang out for a couple hours, and you know, we'll do a date night once or twice a week, and that works out pretty well. And so we're able to kind of focus on both of us pursuing our dreams, and we just make sure that we have a very rigid schedule about when we spend time together. So,
it's like, yeah, Mallory's super supportive. I think both of her parents are actually entrepreneurs, so I think that this is just business as usual for her, and she's a creative person, and we're both people that, you know, we love being together, but we also have our own pursuits and stuff. So, you know, I have a home office, and just like Tim says, it's right down the hall from where she's usually at. And sometimes we will, there was a week or two where between work and back a bit, it got a little hectic, but she, so we would do something where like I'd either grab a laptop and I'd work in the living room, or we'd even just, I have a smaller TV in my home office and she'd even just come in there. And it's just, you know, I think as long as you make sure that you are making the time, and that you're, I think even working in proximity to one another helps, just knowing that the other person is there and you're working, but you can also, you know, spend time together. And honestly, I'm always tinkering with stuff, so I'm not sure it's even really a, like a unique scenario for her, but no, she likes it. And, she just keeps telling us that we need to make an iPad version. That's like her only thing. she says that she doesn't like playing games on her iPhone, cause she feels like her iPhone's all business. And she, when she sits down at her iPad, that's when she's ready to play, and she doesn't like the pixel doubling. So that's, I would say that's the only sore spot as a result of this project.
So I guess that leads me to another question. I know that we've seen some great improvements and additional stuff in 1.1. Is there anything coming for 1.2? Is there a plan for a 1.2?
No, we're going to call it quits now. I think we've set out to do what we're going to do. And I'm working on a great Amish calendar where you can app where you can figure out, you know, when the grain will be ready to harvest, and you can look for that sometime this summer. So thank you guys very much. I'll talk to you later.
See you later.
I was gonna go build a virtual reality gaming platform, but apparently Nintendo already did that.
So. Oh, darn it.
Oh man. Yeah, no, yeah, I mean we're working on stuff. Tim, I'm really bad at the whole marketing, holding back information thing. Tim, what can we talk about?
Well,
people already know we're doing an iPad game, right?
Yeah, we're doing an iPad game. I will say that it is an iPad port of ramps. I mean, I'm not really too concerned about holding information back because I don't really think we have any competitors. Yeah, we are working on an iPad game, and actually the great thing about developing for iOS and the fact that you can reuse code for, you know, not just the iPhone and iPod Touch, but the iPad and now the Mac App Store, is that it makes it very easy for us to take our intellectual property that we've already created and port it to these other platforms. So the actual process of porting from iPhone to iPad is actually already done. It only took 9 days. And so because that went so quickly and we're so excited about making an experience that is truly optimized for iPad, we're going to spend our time creating all kinds of awesome new content for our iPad version that we think will delight our fans and our players just as much as it did for the original game.
Yeah, I'm super excited about it. Honestly, I think I speak for both of us when I say that I think this is going to be kind of like, when I think of the game that I made, this is going to be what I think of as kind of like the optimal version of it.
It's truly awesome to be able to play it on the tablet. Like, words cannot describe it, like, when you experience it firsthand. I mean, after spending so much time playing on the smaller iPhone screen, when you get to play it on a tablet, it's, I'm not going to use the M word. It's awesome.
It is magnificent. It is majestic. And so.
Well, I certainly look forward to it. I know you'd mentioned not having any competition, but perhaps after a little while, we might see that comes out of the top instead of a nice rolling ball. Maybe an angry, some sort of angry, flying animal, and instead of getting to the little hole at the bottom, maybe it falls onto a pig or something like that. I guess if we do see that, we can talk to that company about possibly stealing the idea from this.
Well, so it's kind of funny that you mentioned that, actually, because right about the time that Ramps got Game of the Week was when that whole story broke about the, I think it was a 16-year-old kid that made that bubble ball game. Mm-hmm. And it rose to number one free on the App Store. And it was actually a pretty similar concept. There were some like subtle differences. It's just interesting that you see that there's lots of different games out there that do have very, like, you know, if you compare Angry Birds and Crush the Castle, for example, both are great games that stand alone very well in their own right. I wouldn't necessarily call them competitors necessarily, but you do see a lot of games out there that have similarities. So
yeah, and I mean, I feel like both games drink very heavily from the trough of the Incredible Machine, but I feel like where you know, with Ramps, it's kind of one of those funny things where I love playing like puzzlers on my phone, but my favorite genre is the platformer, and I feel like the differentiating thing with Ramps is that it is a physics puzzler at heart. Well, no, it's like a physics puzzler that has a platformer heart. I think that's how I've described it before, because I really am not, I am more inspired by platformers. So when we're doing this game, I think that's the differentiator, is that a lot of the physics games can, the best physics games, the ones that do really well, tend to have a lot of emotive qualities and stuff. So, but I think that what differentiates ours from the other, you know, similar style, like any sort of guiding ball games, is that, you know, when we're making this, I'm usually, you know, ranting and raving about Mario more than I ever am, you know, Dr. Mario, I guess. I mean, you know, I care more about, you know, Kirby than I do, Tetris. So it, you know, it's just a different feel, but I think what I said to Tim at the time is that, you know, I mean, as someone who created the first version of this as a student, as a school project, you know, mostly I was just happy. I felt when I read the kid's story, I felt a little bit of the same excitement I did back when I made the first game. So I'm thrilled that he was able to, to, you know, make a game at 16 and get it out there and find an audience for it. And I'm excited to see, you know, he made it with this educational, like, sort of game making framework thing, but I'm excited. I bet when that kid turns 18, he's going to be making some awesome stuff natively that he can start being real competition. No, I'm sorry. He can start.
I think he's already monetizing, actually. I think he's doing purchase for more levels. So that kid, he's probably doing pretty well for himself in terms of funding his college education. Uh-huh. So.
Well, in that case, then we must destroy him. Forget everything else I said.
Nah, well, he's a competitor now.
Yeah, I'm totally kidding. But no, I'm happy for him. I mean, if you knock around in the App Store, you can find a lot more ball and goal games. I mean, that's pretty much what basketball is at the end of the day. So it's pretty primal, I think.
So we've talked a bit about the external pressures, like competition. Internally, what was like the hardest thing to deal with, whether it be technical or personal or whatever, when you were working on ramps?
Definitely Tim's personality. No, I'm totally kidding.
I'm so confrontational, that's why.
Yeah, he's just the cursing, the yelling, the throwing things.
I from my perspective, from a technical perspective, just some of the hiccups that you run into from learning a new platform, and I'd say platform, I guess, loosely, because I mean, I'm used to developing for Objective-C and iOS, but what I'm not used to developing for was Cocoa Studio and Box2D and the way some of those things work. And so some things that we discovered late in the game, such as that Box2D actually has a feature or that you can actually do fixed time physics in Box2D so that physics is always consistent, is something that we're going to be exploring for later versions, as that's something that people have called to our attention as something we could do better. Another thing too is that Tyler liked to use transparency a lot in his, well, maybe not a lot, but occasionally in his design, which is not a bad thing. I mean, it's great. And in order to do that, you needed to use 24-bit pings. And the effect of that cause is that can consume a lot of memory on the devices. And so the lesson learned from that is that we need to be more conscientious of how we utilize memory in order to support older devices, which don't necessarily have as much. And so we discovered late in the development process that we're going to need to make some changes. And we did, and it worked out okay, and it still works well for older devices. The funny thing is we're starting to see some newer games actually abandoning support for some of these devices, such as World of Goo came out this week for iPhone, and they only support 3GS and later. So, I think when it comes time, the if and when we do another title, we'll just have to make the call at that time, I think, of which device families we support at the beginning of the process, I think, instead of later on. So
right, yeah. I mean, it's all about, it's not about like abandoning that audience. It's about deciding whether or not they would have been a happy audience to begin with. And if they're not, then there's no reason to sell them something they're not going to like.
Nice. So along those lines, are there any plans for any new games from Backabit anytime soon?
In sketch form, we're always knocking around ideas, and some of them are half serious. But then we kind of go like, the sort of joke ideas or whatever. And some of them are serious. The one thing that we do know is that whatever we do next has to be different. There are certain principles that we always want to keep in play. We always want to have Backabit games be, this goes without saying, but fun. We want them to be friendly. We want them to be inviting. We want them to have a sense of humor. We're not interested in doing games that, that are, I don't know what the right word is, like extremely high pressure or a high learning curve or something like that. We really want to, we aren't too interested in hardcore gaming, I guess is what they sometimes call it. But we have some ideas. So there's definitely, Tim and I talk a lot about different elements that Ramps isn't a good platform for, things like, you know, multiplayer. We talk about things that are not like a linear level based structure, and we talk about things that maybe even ideas that play more on narrative or animation. And so we've crystallized that down into a couple different ideas. We may not decide which one we actually do until, you know, we actually get down to it. I assume there will be another coffee shop meeting for Tim and I somewhere down the line where we'll get together and kind of hash out what's worth working on. Or maybe, I mean, like Tim said, it can be iterative. Maybe we make a couple of prototypes and go, what seems like the most fun? It really comes down to what's the most fun to work on. Because as long as it's a side project, that's got to be the thing. It can't be something where you're like, well, we should do this next, or else you're never going to finish it. That's like one of the things I've learned is that you're never going to finish it if it's something you should do. It has to be something you really want to do.
Mm-hmm. Tim, any thoughts on that?
Just to kind of echo the gaming philosophy of what we're going after, I think as long as I can show it to my mom and she can pick it up and play it and understand it and enjoy it and not be offended by it, then I think that we've succeeded.
You know, there's kind of a running narrative of mom involvement in Backabit, because my mom came up with the name Backabit for a school project you and I did, Peter,
recall that, yes.
And I reused it, so she's very happy. It's this last, I think it was this last Christmas, she told me that she wanted something with Backabit on it because it's her name. And so I gave her a mug, I think, with Backabit on it. And every time that she plays the game, whenever the launch screen comes up, she goes, that is just a terrific name you've chosen. But yeah, no, I mean, there is something really nice about, I think Tim and I have both been at family gatherings where, you know, someone of an older generation, someone of a younger generation. I've been at a family gathering where my grandma and like a cousin who's like 8 will both play the game within the same evening and enjoy it, or at least they love me enough not to lie about not to say they don't enjoy it. But
my nephew, his name is actually in the credits because he helped test over Thanksgiving break.
Nice.
And that's, he's terrific. Like 8. Or no, I think he's 9.
Very so. Cool. Well, I know Essa, who did the soundtrack for the game, one of his family members works at a school, and he said that they were showing off the game and some of the kids already had it. They just took out their iPod touches and they already had it on there. So a lot of love from our family members on this one, which is good.
That's awesome. So as far as actually testing it out, I mean, you had mentioned that helped beta test that. Did you have a large group of beta testers? Were they mostly friends or people you knew? I know that I helped beta test both 1.0 and 1.1, but I don't know anybody else that did it.
Yeah, so we had a group of about, I think it was somewhere between 12 and 14 people that consisted of friends, family, colleagues, and we put together a beta for that, and we did the good old-fashioned ad hoc build for that, which I've always kind of found to be kind of cumbersome, but ever since Test Flight came out, it's become a lot easier. So we did another beta for our 1.1 and added some additional participants, and I think all beta tests in the future are going to be flawless and smooth thanks to Test Flight. And if you haven't been to testflightapp.com, you got to go check it out, because it is one of the most fantastic innovations for iOS development that I've seen in the last year. So, yeah, it's a great product.
It's quite a glowing review of it. I'm sure they'll appreciate that. So I mentioned that I asked before, and I held off until now, but are you guys considering or working on any ports to anything else, say Android, Windows Phone, WebOS, MeeGo, MeeMo, Bada, anything like that?
Well, depending on how observant you are, you may already think that we're going to release something for the N-Gage, but And that was funny. We got if you listen to this, we're mocking you with the best of intentions, but we do have a coworker who sent us back this really considered, thoughtful email about how, congratulations, but I really think you should have gone with Android instead of the N-Gage. And I felt so bad when Tim just responded and went, thanks for your comments. By the way, happy April 1st. we get this is after the iPad question, I'd say this is probably, Tim, is this the second or first most common question we get?
It's up there. I mean, that's for sure, especially for the other major platforms and
I mean, I've never gotten a webOS question or any of the other ones. It's always Android or Windows Phone 7. And both platforms are really cool, and there's stuff we like about them a lot. And I know at work, our teams have explored both of them, and on the projects we're doing now, we explore both of them, and so they're really great. It really comes down to, like I said, this is a side project, and it's about what's doing what's fun. And so when we get to like when we finish Ramped 1.1, we actually, I think we had a very short conversation where we went, okay, do we care more about porting this now or finding, and that's a longer process of do you learn the language or do you partner with a developer or what? Or do we want to work on ramps for iPad? And that was kind of a no-brainer. It's a very short IM conversation where we both went, iPad. And so, just because it's a new title, it's more fun to work on new stuff than it is on old. So it could happen sooner or later. There are less Windows Phone 7 is straightforward, like the App Store is. It's got a curated, store and everything like that. But Android's a bit of a, we've been watching. We have a lot of friends who have Android phones and stuff. My buddy Vin Thomas has one, and so he asks this a lot. But it's, we watch something like Angry Birds, how Rovio, they released the same one they had on the iPhone, same price point and everything like that. But the device fragmentation was so crazy that they ended up getting a lot of angry consumers, angry consumers playing Angry Birds, and they who weren't able to run it properly, so they scaled it back and made it Angry Birds Lite, and they made it free and they put ads in it. And I believe I read an article not too long ago that said where someone at Rovio said that they actually make more revenue now on the advertising in that than they do on sales of the iOS title. So what that told me is that the opportunity is there to engage with consumers and find an audience and create revenue. It's just a little bit more complicated to think about, and it might require just a little bit more thinking. And so again, it just comes down to us sitting down and going, are we ready to think about that yet, or are we wanting to solve more gameplay problems rather than platform problems? And I think that's why we've been leaning towards games right now. But never say never. I mean, we're both gadget geeks. We love playing with different stuff, so.
I think what we're discovering now with Ramps 1.1, and particularly with some of the new experimental stuff that we're doing for iPad, is that at least from my perspective, because I'm becoming a lot more comfortable and confident with just iOS development in general, but also doing gaming for iOS, is that we can explore a lot more creative ideas, and the platforms kind of get out of the way, and we can concentrate more on being creative. And so that's really kind of liberating. And so I'm really excited about what we're going to be able to do with iPad and being able to focus on that. And I think, like Tyler said, when the time comes that we get ramps for iPad out there, then at that time, then we figure out what's next. So.
Well, I think I look forward to seeing all that. I know, I believe Aaron Hockley on Twitter was the first person I saw to ask for Android. So if it ever does happen, I know at least one person that'll be super enthusiastic about
Although,
it.
Although I think he's got an iPhone now. I saw some recently.
Oh, right.
On Twitter.
Yes, he did switch over. So I guess maybe you guys were the ones that switched him over. Maybe he just had to have ramps.
Well, the iPad is definitely kind of a Trojan horse for a lot of those people. You know, a lot of my friends who didn't get iPhones but opted for Android handsets, I noticed that they harbor no loyalties when it comes to the tablet market, and they get iPads. So it's another reason we're excited about the platform. I don't know if it's, you know, it just seems to really be for kind of casual, fun use. And so maybe that's part of the reason Ramps feels really nice on it so far.
Well, very cool. All right, the last question I have for both of you. How has the success of Ramps changed anything? Your working life, your day-to-day life, anything like that? And we can start with Tim.
I would say in my working life, I feel a lot more enthusiastic about iOS as a platform and wanting to develop for it. I think there's a lot of... I mean, there's a lot of opportunity with the mobile web, but I think that there's still so much focus on apps, and we're not really seeing a decline of that. Well, I think we're seeing a continued increase in mobile web. That I kind of want to be able to do both, and in my working life, where I'm actually seeing more transition into mobile app development within our team at work, and. Just last month, we launched an app called Hotspots at South by Southwest for Wagner Edstrom. And it was a way to be able to find out where all the hot parties are at South by Southwest. And actually, one in five people at the festival had the app installed. So we're starting to see some momentum there in my work life and being able to do more app development in addition to web development. And day-to-day life... I guess it hasn't really changed at all. I'm still working on mobile games in my free time and loving it. So,
yeah, I mean, it's the same for me, and it's been a combination of a little bit of Ramps and a lot of the Sasquatch site has given our team definitely more of a mobile focus than it had before. And outside of work, it's really it's actually really surreal because now, you know, we get asked to speak somewhere like Web Visions, or I'll get emails from other devs and everything. And it's weird being in a position where people think that I know what I'm talking about and when it comes to games. And so I guess the weirdest thing is to kind of, I've been a fan of video games my whole life, you know, since I was old enough to tap the NES gun up to the CRT screen, no matter how many times my dad told me, stop doing that, you're going to scratch the screen. That was like my earliest memory. And I've always, I was laughing when I was telling Tim, because I, for some reason, I know it got lukewarm reviews, but I absolutely love it. I got totally addicted to Epic Mickey. I got sucked in when we were doing Ramps 1.0. I actually blame it because I would get kind of panicked because I would have spent an entire evening playing Epic Mickey. And then the next day I would get so much done because I was trying to make up for the last evening loss to that. So it's really surreal, like actually kind of, you know, it's not like, I'm not Shigeru Miyamoto or anything, but having even like a toe into that world and seeing the decisions of these people I really admire and respect, you know, it's like there's this amazing documentary that I believe is almost finished on indie games. I think it's just called an indie games documentary, and they released some gorgeous Vimeo video in particular where they interview Team Meat, who made Super Meat Boy. And I remember watching that while we were developing and being really inspired by it. And after it, I still remain, it's just really crazy to me to be able to, with no, you know, I'm not a game design major. I'm just a designer and an occasional cartoonist who happens to love them. And to basically be validated and told, like, yes, your ideas will work, and yes, there is this sort of niche audience that will respond to it. you know, it's definitely changed the way I engage with side projects. It's changed the way that I play games. I alternate between being more and less forgiving now that I know what goes into them, depending on what the issue is. And it's also, you know, it's something I think about when I do any side projects now is, you know, how does this look in proximity to what I do want to do on ramps or whatever other projects happen. I mean, ultimately it's just, it's really cool. I love building stuff. I love building these games, and it's amazing to find, you know, I guess, 90,000 people plus 25,000 pirates or however much it was, that will, when we make something, we'll actually take the time to play it. And according to our stats, play it a reasonable amount of time, higher than average for an iPhone game. So you know, it's really cool. It's one of the coolest things. Yeah, it's just, it's a point of pride for me. My parents gave me, my dad was so excited when, they were both excited, but my dad was excited when we got featured as an iPhone Game of the Week. So he took a screenshot of the iTunes window and he printed it out and framed it. And I recently had a birthday and he gave me a same copy. They got the ThinkGeek Photoshop frame, which is like the PSD, and they printed out that. And now I've got that at work because, you know, to be admirers of the platform and the company and to just be as someone who loves cool games, it just, it's intensely gratifying to have been able to ramps is really at the end of the day, it's less me going like, this is how I would make a game. And it's more a love letter to every game, to every casual or friendly or inviting game that I love playing. And so I hope if other game makers play it, I hope the one thing they get through it is that they just get an earnest sense of, you know, how much I appreciate all of their work every day. That sounds really crazy and probably overblown compared to it's just a silly $1.99 game, but that's what it means to me.
Well, that's fantastic. I want to thank you both for taking the time tonight to have this little chat, and I wanted to make sure that they everyone listening knows where to go. So obviously, ramps for the iPhone you can find on the iPhone or iOS App Store. If they just search for ramps, you. Also got your blog there at backabit.com, just backabit.com. And then I was going to ask where people can find you online. So, Tim, where can people find you?
Probably the easiest way to find me is on Twitter. My Twitter handle is U2, like the band, and then E-L-A-N.
And then Tyler?
Well, you can also find me on Twitter. My username is just my full name, Tyler Sticka. And you can also find me online at tylerstica.com. And if you don't know how to spell that, just go to the website where you found this podcast, because my name's linked to from there. And I'm sure it'll also probably be in the blog post unless Peter feels like being a jerk and omitting our information.
No, I will be sure to make the show notes be very full of happy links. All right, you've been listening to the Friends Electric Podcast, Episode 4. Stay classy, Internet.